Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
With the New York Times in one hand and the Catechism of the Catholic Church in the other, Al Cresta is ready for conversations of consequence.
America is as divided as it has been in 150 years.
Politics is symptomatic of the culture.
They don't have a personal relationship with Christ.
We've been sacramentalized, but not evangelized.
Why should Washington listen to us when our own house is in disarray?
The church's greatest riches are her people.
Share the contagious joy of being a friend of Christ.
Story after story after story of people who have had inexplicable healings.
Broadcasting from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and taking a closer Catholic look at current events, issues, and ideas. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
That's beautifully said, Al.
Thanks for your voice for liberty.
It's like a homecoming each time on your program.
Clear to me that you've thought these things through at a deep level.
Let's build the church, and then we'll bless the nations. Well, good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta, thanking you for joining me once again as we talk about the things that matter most. Walter Hoy has been with me on this program before. He's a Black Baptist pastor. He was sent to jail back in 2009 for standing on a public sidewalk outside an abortion clinic with a sign. And the sign read, "God loves you and your baby. Let us help you." That was the sign. He went to jail for that. We're going to find out why and how it is in America that an offer of help of that sort should be such a threat to the powers that be. You know, we are facing an increasingly hostile culture, and in the past may have been regarded as sacrificial giving, a willingness to help women facing unexpected and troubling pregnancies. In the past, that might have been regarded as worthy of praise. It is now seen as meddling. It is now seen as interfering with the right to abort. We're going to talk to Walter about this. Also coming up today, the subtle lie about women. During the rise of the radical feminist movement, there was one element that held many ideologies together, because really the so-called foremothers of feminism, modern second wave feminism, had a lot of different, they were didn't get along always. But what held them together was abortion. Abortion was the one policy initiative that could be agreed upon. We're going to talk that over with Dr. Carrie Gress. We'll look at beauty, what it is and why we need it. And Teresa Tomeo launches a new website today. All that coming up. But first, the news headlines.
Thank you, Al, and good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Wednesday, July 10th. It is the Feast of St. Veronica Giuliani. And today's news is brought to you by Charity Mobile, supporting pro-life and Catholic causes at charitymobile.com. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is calling for prayers for Christian brothers and sisters in Iran. While speaking at the Christians United for Israel conference in Washington, D.C. yesterday, Pompeo spoke about four Iranian Christians sentenced to 10-year prison sentences for acting against national security. Pompeo said they were sent to prison after being beaten for running house churches. He said he prays every day for people of all religions persecuted in Iran and asked those in attendance to do the same. The leader of Hong Kong has declared a controversial extradition bill dead. Correspondent Bill Zinfer reports that this may not satisfy protesters.
Carrie Lam has made it clear that the bill that sparked massive protests in Hong Kong is, for all intents and purposes, dead. However, that may not be enough to placate protesters who have demanded the proposal be officially withdrawn. The bill would have allowed those arrested in Hong Kong to be extradited to mainland China. One activist said there was no reason why the demonstrations should stop. The protesters have also demanded that Lam step down. Bill Zinfer, NBC News Radio.
The UK ambassador to the US is resigning following the recent leak of diplomatic cables that were highly critical of the Trump administration. Kim DeRoche stepped down today. The cables obtained over the weekend by a British tabloid show DeRoche assessing the White House as dysfunctional. And the world champion US women's soccer team has their keys to New York City following a ceremony at City Hall and a massive parade. The US defeated the Netherlands on Sunday to win its fourth overall World Cup championship. This is only the second time that the women's team has had a ticker tape parade in New York. The first time was in 2015 when the team won the World Cup after beating Japan. With your Ave Maria Radio News, I'm Dan McGraw.
And a good afternoon to you. I'm Al Cresta. Our friend Teresa Tomeo is launching a new website, travelitalyexpert.com. Now, we're going to explain all this. But, you know, if you know Teresa at all, you know that Italy is her second home. And she has so much to share about Italy, its sacred sites, its historic sites. And you know Teresa, of course, is host of Catholic Connection on Ave Maria Radio and EWTN. She has spent 20 years as a reporter and anchor in the Detroit secular news media. She's a columnist for our Sunday Visitor, author of several books, including Beyond Sunday. She's also a host of the Catholic View for Women on EWTN. You can follow her at teresatomeo.com. But let's talk about the new, really, it's an entirely new enterprise for you.
It is, and it's all about evangelization. And I was really inspired by our Archbishop Alan Vigneron's beautiful pastoral letter, Unleash the Gospel, where he's asking all of us, not just those here in the Archdiocese, because the letter has gained popularity around the country, to look at different ways to evangelize. And the one thing I noticed in all the years I've been leading pilgrimages, co-sponsored, of course, by Ave Maria Radio and corporate travel, and you know this, too, for the trips that you've done, is the impact that beauty has on people.
Yes.
Regardless of where they're at in their walk with the Lord, maybe they're not even there. Because we have a lot of people that come on trips with friends and family just because, oh, this is a really good organized tour. It's compactful. I'll have some time on my own, but I'll get to see what I need to see. And then this whole new world opens up to them by the beauty.
Yeah. Beauty has a way of getting beyond under people's defenses.
Yep.
It has a way of charming. It has a way of beckoning that propositional truth sometimes doesn't. And I think that I'm delighted that you're doing this because, in fact, Bishop Barron for years has been saying that this is an underused area of apologetics and evangelization. And this is the outreach based on beauty, using beauty as a way of attracting people to the glories of the faith. Oh. So how many times have you been to Italy?
Last count, over 50.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
First trip was to over 20 years ago, and that was with a parish trip that we did with our home parish in the Archdiocese of Detroit, and long before Deacon Dom entered the diaconate. And we went with my parents. My father was in the choir and wanted to see him sing at a papal mass and follow them over and wanted to you know, learn more about my Italian heritage. I'm 100% Italian, both me and my husband. And so I was very eager to go. I had heard a lot about it. But when I was in college, I didn't think about being an exchange student. I was studying journalism. I was too busy.
Right.
But when I reverted to the faith, all of a sudden going to St. Peter's and going to the other major basilicas and seeing the land not only of my faith but my family heritage became of interest. And the first time we went, we felt this odd feeling that we were more at home there in some ways than we were in the United States. And so gradually,
interesting.
Yeah, we made it a part of our vacation, saved up as many miles as we could, and went on our own a few times. And then I started working for this wonderful place called Ave Maria and EWTN and found myself going over covering stories.
Yep.
And doing pilgrimages, teaming up with you and with corporate travel and that. And every time we would go over for a pilgrimage, which ended up being and still is about two or three times a year, we would add some days on either end. And I just found myself with all of the negativity out there, with all of the toxicity, especially right now in the last few years in our country and in the church. There's so many problems, so many issues. People are very we're so raw and we're so hurt on so many levels, and there's so much pain and just general toxicity that going to Italy, spending time researching this beautiful country and its amazing sights, Eucharistic miracles, it helps me and helps me focus on Jesus and the church, but also relaxes me and opens me up to the beauty of God in so many ways. And I want people to experience that. And because I would always report on your show or other shows from Italy, and because I've learned so much about traveling there, I must get, Al, over the last 5 to 10 years, been getting 2, 3, 4, or 5 emails a month of people asking me for help and sometimes asking me to do a full-blown itinerary, which takes a lot of time and a lot of effort.
Yeah.
And I've put thousands of hours of research into Italy, and I've been to almost every region of the country. And so in speaking with you and with our general manager, Mike Jones, and with John Hale from Corporate Travel, you encouraged me to do a little bit more with this. So I decided to develop a website, all kinds of great videos that I've done over the years on different parts of Italy, faith section, pilgrimage section, just a general information section, all about the beauty of Italy, and then offering myself for a very small fee just to help me pay for the website, a consulting service.
Sure.
People can call me up and talk to me for an hour, and I will help them construct the itinerary that's right for them. And to make it, because see, the bottom line is, if we're going to help people open up to the beauty of a place like Italy and its historic sites, as I said, Eucharistic miracles, you want the trip to be done in the sense that you're not going to be rushing around, exhausted, going in the height of the summer where it's super hot. You want to be able to enjoy it and savor it so you can hear God speak to you in different ways.
Yeah. You write that Italians have a famous saying. I'll probably mess up the pronunciation, but dolce far niente.
Dolce fa niente, the sweetness or art of doing nothing.
That doesn't mean laziness, I assume.
No, it means when you're doing nothing, as I say in the video that I sent to you and your wonderful executive producer, Bryant, it means just savoring the moment. And in addition to all the beauty, whether you're standing in line to see the David or the Pietà or wherever you're at, Sistine Chapel, you will notice the Italians, usually middle of the day, they'll take a long pranzo or lunch, which is their big meal, about 2 or 3 hours. The waiters will not come and give you the bill because that's your table. You can stay there till 10 p.m. They don't really care. That's the way they do things in Italy. And you'll also notice in the afternoon, people getting an espresso or maybe having an aperitif, maybe having an Aperol spritz or a vino or a Bellini, and just relaxing and taking in the atmosphere. It looks like they're doing nothing, but they're talking, they're sharing, they're really doing something. And by giving yourself a little bit of a slower pace, you're going to experience that same thing. You'll have more time to ponder the religious art in a particular basilica. You'll have more time to enjoy the beauty. But that is one of the hardest things to convince people of, to give themselves even just an extra day or two, because we are so American and so in a rush, and we want to get it all done in a week.
Yeah, that's true. There is a real drivenness that we have, I think, being raised in this culture which values efficiency and speed and getting to the head of the line. It is difficult to recapture the art of doing nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Or in some cases, you want to be more theological about it, the art of contemplation.
Yeah, reflection.
Yeah.
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 And this is why I say, by the way, that what you're really good at doing is helping people turn recreation into recreation.
I love the quote you gave me, and that's in the press release, and it's on the website on our endorsements page, because you really get the sense of recreating and understanding a little bit more maybe about life, the flow of things, contemplating. I mean, it sounds, maybe a little bit corny, but contemplating the universe, because when you go to Italy and you see the art and the architecture and you think about, okay, how did they do this? And how in the world did somebody carve the Pietà or the David? Well, because we know it's a God-given talent. And so it causes you to wonder. It causes you to reflect. And this, I guess you could call it in many ways, stealth evangelization. And this is my hope. Now, I love to talk about Italy. I love to write about Italy. There's blogs, there's video blogs, there's all kinds of great information on the website. But the ultimate goal here is I really, really pray and offer it up to God that someone who consults with me, I don't ask them, I don't have to have a Catholic card to consult with me. But if most people, even if they're not religious, do want to see the Vatican.
Yes.
They do want to see the Sistine Chapel. They do want to see the artwork. They do want to go to the Uffizi Gallery in Florence. And they are going to encounter mostly religious images.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
And so my prayer is that through that experience and through the sheer beauty and the love of life that my people, the Italians, have, that it will get people thinking. Sometimes there are conversions or reversions on the spot. We've seen reversions on the spot on trips. Other times, 2 years later, someone will contact me and say, the trip you gave us, the ideas you gave us, or the pilgrimage that we were on with you and Steve Ray or Al or whomever, it had such a profound impact on my life. But what I want to do with Tease Italy, TravelItalyExpert.com, is do that on a more regular basis.
Yeah. I think it's marvelous. And I really do hope that we're announcing it today. I hope people take advantage of it. What do they do to get in touch with you on this?
Well, you just go to TravelItalyExpert.com, as you mentioned, and it's also linked on my homepage at TeresaTomeo.com. And take some time and look around, look at the videos. But there is a questionnaire. If you do want to consult with me, if you have a trip coming up, even if you've already made, let's say, your hotel or plane reservations. Now, if you do need that, we can direct you to Corporate Travel for all the hotel and private tours, whatever you need. But even if you've already, let's say, have your hotel and your dates picked, we can help you, myself, by myself, or we can direct you for more detail with Corporate Travel. But fill out a questionnaire. We have a form there asking you specifically how much time you want to spend. Is it a special occasion? What type of a trip? Do you want cooking classes? Do you want mainly a religious experience? You fill out the form, and we get back to you, and we set up a consultation time. That's simple.
Well, roughly how long do you spend with people?
It depends on what we think they need based on the questionnaire. It's either a half hour or an hour consultation.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's tremendous. And I like the idea, and this is one of the things that we've learned when we started these pilgrimages. Frequently we'll have a very committed husband or wife and a not-so-committed husband or wife. And it's remarkable. The husband, the uncommitted husband or wife, is tagging along, you know, just out of deference to their spouse who's committed to the faith. But during the pilgrimage, the beauty of the environment, the awareness that they're entering a sacred space, helps to break down all kinds of walls and defenses, and allows them to begin to think that this is a future option for me. This is something I could embrace too, not just my wife, not just my husband.
Yeah.
So I think this is another way of expanding that ministry.
That's my hope and prayer, and I really do believe that once you get over there, I think the biggest regret people have is I've instructed a lot of people, and some people have said, well, you know, I only want 6 days, and I say, okay, you do what you want, but once you get over there, you're going to regret it. I hope that they consider spending a little bit more time.
Yeah.
If you're going all the way over there,
that's right.
Give yourself at least 10 days, because you have to figure 2 days for travel. And once you get there, you'll wish it was 2 weeks because
it's true.
It's so, you've been there.
Yeah.
You know how amazing it is.
Oh, it's incredible.
It's just incredible. Every time you turn a corner, and I've been there over 50 times. And in Rome, I know Rome like the back of my hand, and yet I still bump into things I haven't seen before.
Yeah.
It's just crazy. I always say Italy is God on steroids. I mean, he took this country and said, looky what I can do. I'm God, and infused all of this beauty and the great artist and everything into this one land that's not all that big, but quite powerful. So check it out, and I really appreciate the support you've given me and all the folks at Ave and EWTN. So it's TravelItalyExpert.com. I'd love to consult with folks on
all
their
right.
trip.
Again, everybody needs beauty as well as bread. Right? You need places to play in and pray in. Consider Italy. You'll find sacred space, sacred time, and you'll find just beauty of all sorts. Teresa, thanks.
Thank you, Al.
We recently won an important case in federal court in Toledo, Ohio. For too long, city police officers were enforcing local and state laws to prohibit pro-lifers from engaging in free speech activity on the public sidewalks outside of a local abortion center. In our case, the court issued an order prohibiting the city and its police officers from enforcing any local or state law as applied to the expressive activity of pro-life demonstrators, including our clients. This is yet another victory for the First Amendment in a case where a city and its police officers were abusing their authority to silence peaceful pro-life demonstrators to appease those engaged in the baby-killing business. As the court's order demonstrates, the Constitution protects our clients' pro-life activity from such abuse. The government has no authority to silence our clients' speech simply because they are preaching the gospel on a public sidewalk next to an abortion center. Indeed, this victory is yet another blow to the abortion industry, which has too often relied on the government to promote and support its bloody business by silencing those who oppose it. The actions of the city of Toledo and its officers in this case were deplorable, and they violated our clients' fundamental rights. We stop this egregious activity in Toledo, and we intend to stop it wherever it raises its ugly head. I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel for the American Freedom Law Center, bringing you this Faith and Freedom Minute. You can learn more about the American Freedom Law Center and its fight for your faith and freedom by visiting our website and liking us on Facebook.
What's stopping you from becoming a Catholic?
Why can't women become priests?
I don't understand why I have to earn salvation.
How is it possible that God created everything?
Why do I need to confess my sins to a priest?
Why is the Catholic Church so unwilling to wreck?
The Catholic Church is too rich.
Catholics worship Mary and are committed.
As far as I'm concerned, all religions are equal.
You are called to communion with Dr. David Anders.
tonight, 11 p.m. Eastern, on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
The leading Catholic voices are on EWTN Radio.
Every single day, I get to help our listeners of the Sunrise Morning Show wake up, find out what's going on in the church and the world, and then walk with them as we all seek to grow in knowledge and love of Jesus Christ and the Catholic faith. I mean, how could it get any better?
The Sunrise Morning Show with Anna Mitchell and Matt Swaim. Tomorrow morning, 6 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Beth, why is our health insurance so expensive? Our premium and deductible are so high. Plus, I don't want my family to support a company that doesn't share our values.
Kim, there is another option. Check out CMF Curo. It's an affordable Catholic healthcare ministry where members share their medical costs in community, and it's pro-life. We joined last year and have saved thousands, all without compromising our values. Just go to MyCatholicHealthcare.com.
CMF Curo sounds exactly like what our family needs.
Yeah, that's MyCatholicHealthcare.com.
Cresta in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization, Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 80% of the referral check to Ave Maria Radio and Students for Life. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
Hi, everybody. Dr. A here. Well, being a grandparent's just like being a parent, isn't it? Only different here. I have a book with that same title. And in that book, I take on the ups and the downs of being grandparents. It's a second go around with the kids in a way that mirrors God's own unconditional love for us. You can get the book and my many others at AveMariaRadio.net.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. The problem of abortion in the black community is severe. Dr. Day Gardner, president of the National Black Pro-Life Union, was talking on EWTN News Nightly and made this stunning point.
It's gotten to the point where in inner cities, especially where the Planned Parenthood and the abortion facilities, they set up camp there, where abortion is up to 50% in most cities, and in New York City, we just heard 60% of all abortions are performed on black women.
Joining me right now is Walter Rahoy. He's an ordained Baptist minister. He's joined me once before on this program. His story has recently been told in an outstanding book called Black and Pro-Life in America, The Incarceration and Exoneration of Walter B. Hoy. He's the founder of Issues for Life. That's issues, the numeral four, life.org, and walterhoy.com. Walter, good to have you back here. Thanks.
Al, it's great to be here. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I'm glad the book is finally out. We've been waiting for it.
It's been awesome.
Listen, let's go back to what happened that day in March of 2009. Were you regularly at that clinic?
I was. I'm pastoring in a church. I'm really busy. I only had one day a week, and it was 2 hours for one day. But oh my goodness, we did it every Tuesday, and oh my goodness, that's when everything started to happen.
Yeah,
they even recruited abortion clinic escorts or volunteers for the abortion clinic. They were dressed up in orange vests, and right. They would follow me all around the sidewalk. This is a public sidewalk, and they would block me with their signs, and they would block my signs. So I'm a black man on a public sidewalk, and I'm being followed by two, three, four abortion clinic escorts. And so we're stopping traffic. People are wondering
what's going on here, right? Good heavens. How long had you been doing sidewalk counseling at that clinic?
Well, I got a call from a few friends, and they said, we have an experiment. We're thinking that the women going in the clinic would find it difficult not to talk to their pastor as they go into the clinic.
Mm.
And oh my goodness, they said, we thought it would be difficult. They were telling me that for a woman to walk by her priest, her pastor, her preacher, her deacon, her elder, they just couldn't walk by someone they recognized. And so they were trying to reach my community, women in my community. So they asked me what I give it a shot. I said, sure, I'd be happy to do it. And I wasn't out there, maybe 3 months before it really, the police started coming regularly. And interesting, Al, the police, they didn't see anything wrong with it initially. Mm-hmm. And so the police were literally helping me. They say, stand over here, stand over there.
Right.
You'll be just fine. But the women were stopping, the women were talking with me, and they were not going into the abortion clinic, and that got to be a problem.
So you actually were having some significant success at talking with women. So,
Al, absolutely. My sign, God loves you and your baby, let us help you, literally answered the three most asked questions I'd get. The women did recognize me as a preacher in the pulpit, and they would say, preacher, is it true that God loves me? I'd say, yes. They say, is it true that God loves me and my baby? And mama always referred to her child in her womb as her baby. It wasn't fetal tissue. It wasn't anything like that.
Right, right. And then the third question is, can I get help?
Absolutely. I'd say, yes, God loves you. I'd say, yes, God loves you and your baby. And then she would look me square in the eye and say, well, if that's true, preacher, and she'd make sure she'd say that, will you help me? And we did. It didn't matter what she needed.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, what happened was this one Tuesday, I'm out there for just 2 hours, and the clinic had 27 appointments. There's no way the clinic can do 27 abortions in a two-hour period. But the women weren't making an appointment for an abortion. They had heard there was a black preacher on the public sidewalk helping women, and they came to get help. They were literally waiting in line for me to finish helping one to come up to me and let me help them.
Wow.
And that after that, then the clinic started talking with the city of Oakland, the chief of police, the mayor, the city council, about creating this law.
Yeah. So they were aware of the success you were having with women. The police had previously been, helpful. They'd been pointing places where you could stand to make sure that you could reduce your liability. Once the law was passed, did the police become much more difficult to work with?
Not at first.
Okay.
Once the law was passed, I came out there and there were three or four police cars waiting on me. They were there at the request of the abortion clinic. And I walked up to them and I introduced myself. They said, we know who you are, Reverend. And they asked me, what was I going to do? I said, I was going to go across the street and stand on the public sidewalk. We weren't blocking any access. We weren't doing anything like that. And
mm-hmm.
they said, we know. And afterwards, I was aware of the newly passed law was. And so the first time I went out there with three or four police cars, they're looking at me. They didn't do a thing. It wasn't for about a month or so later that the abortion clinic had enough, and they demanded that I be arrested. And that's when I was arrested.
What was the law? What did the law actually say? What was this bubble law? What did it actually say?
Well, this law was tailored just for me. It made it illegal for me to stand on a public sidewalk, pass out literature, and have a conversation. And then they had a mother may I clause. I couldn't get within 8 feet of any client coming into the abortion clinic. But women would walk right up to me. So as long as they wanted to talk to me, that was fine. And so the police didn't see anything wrong. The women were walking right up to me, and we were having a conversation. I was passing out literature to a pregnancy care center, and oh my goodness, it had just got, the abortion center had just got enough of it, and they demanded that I be arrested. And when I got arrested, Al, the police came and they started to arrest the abortion clinic escorts. I was stunned because instead of following me that one day, which I was glad, I felt good, they're not following me, they were all crowded by the abortion clinic door. And you couldn't get in through them, right? So the police drove up, parked the car, and went to go arrest them. But they said, no, no, not us. They said, it's this black man down there, down the street.
Wow.
And the police put their head down, and they came to get me.
Did they were they reluctant to do so? Did they express any reluctance?
Yeah, they were. They weren't when they put their head down. They weren't happy about it.
Yeah,
but let me
right.
tell you this though: when they arrest you, you know how they handcuff you, and then
yeah.
they walk you to the car, and then they put their hand on top of your head,
right.
sort of stuff you in the back seat. Well, I'm wearing my hat. My hat says "Got Jesus" on it.
Mm-hmm.
And when he saw my hat, he said, "Preacher, are you aware that your hat violates the law?" I said, "What do you mean?" He says, "Jesus has a tendency to discourage women from having an abortion. Your hat's a sign." Oh, my goodness.
You're kidding.
I tell you, Al, no, I'm not. From then on, I started wearing my hat and my glasses regularly. I wore them every day at that point.
This law, you're convinced, was targeted towards you because of the success you were having outside this clinic?
Oh, absolutely. During the pretrial hearings, we learned that there was one day when the abortion clinic met with the city council, that they met with the Oakland city attorney. They had the clinic escorts director there with them, chief of police, and they were putting together a law that would impact my effectiveness on the public sidewalk. It came out during the trial, and it became abundantly clear that when women were getting the help they needed, they often changed their mind about going into the clinic.
Yeah. The willingness of the police to follow the law is not surprising. The willingness of the legislators, though, to pass a law that targeted you does surprise me. What did they think? I mean, how could they keep you off the public sidewalk? That's what I don't get. I mean, it seems absurd to me. What was the rationale for that?
The rationale was that, according to them, I was a threat to the women on the public sidewalk.
Good heavens.
But I tell you, Al, I'm in court. We're during the trial. There's not one woman testifying against me. They couldn't find one woman to testify because we were helping
right.
all the women.
Right.
So the only testimony against me in court, and I'm being tried now, is the abortion clinic escort director herself. And then guess what? We just so happened to have videotape evidence of the 2 days that I was being called into question. And this is a miracle. I had video done so I could show my church. I was trying to recruit more members for the ministry, but I wanted them to know what it was like to be on the public sidewalk. We were going to bring a name now. We were going to be nonviolent.
Right.
We were going to handle it this way. And so I was training. Well, it just so happens that those were the exact 2 days I would be called into question. And with our videotape evidence that they did not want us to admit in court, we impeached the only testimony against me. It turns out that the abortion clinic escort director, she lied. She lied in court. And our videotape evidence proved it.
Wow.
But it didn't make any difference. The judge allowed her impeached testimony to be used in the Oakland City Attorney's closing arguments, and he gave some pretty, bogus instructions to the clinic.
Wow.
To the jury.
Walter, hold it there. We'll come back, continue the conversation. My guest is Reverend Walter Hoy. The book, Black and Pro-Life in America, it's his story. being arrested in Oakland, California in March of 2009 because of his efforts to help women entering abortion clinics. We're going to say more on the other side of the break.
The EWTN home video highlight for July is The Chaplet of the Divine Mercy. This beautiful new rendition of the beloved devotional was shot on location at the National Shrine of the Divine Mercy in Stockbridge, Massachusetts. Enjoy five versions of this invocation of trust in our Lord. Order your DVD at EWTNRC.com 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or call 1-800-854-6316.
We have a problem. Our culture is dying, and souls are in danger of being lost. The answer is conversion to Jesus Christ in His church. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a Catholic organization, and we have hundreds of teams spreading the good news throughout the country. But we need your help. The harvest is great, but the laborers are few. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com, a nonprofit company.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI experienced many triumphs and near superhuman struggles during his papacy. Now go behind the scenes in Benedict Up Close, the inside story of 8 dramatic years, the latest release from EWTN Publishing. You'll learn how Pope Benedict's youth shaped his papacy, the real reason he resigned, and more. Benedict Up Close, available now at EWTNRC.com or call 1-800-854-6316.
What does the Catholic Catechism teach about divorce? The Church does not permit divorce in a valid marriage because she is firmly adhering to the rules set down by her founder. Jesus Christ made it very clear that a sacramental valid marriage was not to be dissolved. Whoever divorces his wife, he declared, and marries another, commits adultery against her. And if she divorces her husband and marries another, she commits adultery. Therefore, the Church maintains a second marriage cannot be recognized as valid if the first marriage is valid. The Catechism tells us, if the divorced are remarried civilly, they find themselves in a situation that objectively contravenes God's law. In such a situation, they may not receive Eucharistic communion as long as this situation persists. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
I'm Dr. Stan Williams, and this is Evidences for Christianity. Some agnostics claim that if God exists, He's too distant to be involved in our lives. They say God may have created the universe, but such involvement was eons ago. Maybe He created the solar system, but then He fled, never to be seen or heard from again. Well, how long has it been since God made Himself manifest in the world? Was it as long ago and as far away as some doubters claim? Or was it relatively recently that God showed up? The Christian incarnation claims God cares so much for us that He came in the form of a man, Jesus. He was born of a woman, lived, ate, slept, as humans do, for over 30 years, and was then killed to redeem us. That's hardly a distant, uninvolved God. Such is the evidence for Christianity. To explore more, go to AveMariaRadio.net. Under Resources, look for me, Dr. Stan Williams.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. With me is Reverend Walter Hoy, a licensed and ordained Baptist minister whose story is told in Black and Pro-Life in America, published by Ignatius. And we're talking about his ministry outside an abortion clinic in Oakland, California, and also his arrest there. What was your environment being raised? Did your mom and dad have a deep Christian faith? I mean, when you were growing up as a kid, did you imagine that you would be, you know, an activist of this sort?
Oh, not at all. And yes, my mom and dad were very much Christian, and my dad made sure that I was in church, and I had no idea it would ever come to this.
Yeah.
But Al, it was my son, my firstborn son. He was born about 3 months premature, and he weighed in at 2.1 pounds. And so the doctors had called me in and were explaining to me that the hospital had done all that they could, that my son was going to die. Mm. And they wanted me to sign off on the papers saying that I understood that the hospital had done all that the hospital could. I refused to sign it. I told the doctors that I knew a greater physician than them. And so I went home and prayed all night. But God didn't answer my prayer at all. So I'm up early in the morning. I'm in the preemie ward in the hospital. And Al, I'm holding my son in the palm of my right hand. He's down. He's now down to 1.9.
Wow.
I mean, he's no bigger than a fork, a spoon, or a knife.
Mm-hmm.
And as I'm holding my son, I began to behold him. I began to actually notice something beside the needles, the bandages, and the hospital apparatuses. I noticed his eyes and his fingers and his toes. And, you know, Al, he looks just like me. Mm. And that's when God spoke to me. God said, Walter, this is what's supposed to be on the inside of a woman. And after that, I knew exactly what abortion was and what abortion does. And that changed me forever.
Were you already serving as a minister at that time?
I sure was.
Yeah. Okay.
I was already licensed, ordained, and, you know, in the ministry.
Yeah. Wow. So that kind of direct confrontation with your, again, your premature son was really received as a message of what you had to do in the future. Did you immediately get involved in pro-life work after that?
No. I thought that I could go back to church and we would just start talking about it.
Right.
I just assumed that it would be, you know, a subject that would come up and I was going to be ready to share my testimony.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the subject never came up. We only ever talked about it in the parking lot. And we would never talk about it, you know, in the sanctuary.
Interesting. What do you make of that?
Well, it turns out that I've since learned that abortion is the most controversial subject in my church. We're just not going to ever talk about it. Not ever, but we weren't talking about it. So I was sort of the Joseph to the Pharaoh in my church. I was riding in the second chariot.
Okay.
And so I said, hey, we're going to have a conference called Issues That Matter, and we're going to talk about this. We're just not going to talk about it in the parking lot. We're going to talk about it in the sanctuary. And that changed everything.
What was the reaction?
Well, we invited Dr. Clenard Childers from New Jersey to come in. We invited Star Parker.
Yep.
To come in, and oh my goodness, the explosion. I mean, the people were absolutely shocked that we were talking about it. And then when we laid out the facts, the data, that was irrefutable. We're talking about the data from the abortion industry itself. That this is the data that they're willing to admit to. It was clear, and oh my goodness, things began to change. People started saying, you know what? I've had an abortion in my life and I need some help.
Wow. Wow. So it was generally a positive reaction then from the members of the church?
It was, particularly in the beginning. But as time went on, it began to become unpopular again. And ultimately, you know, some very difficult times in my church regarding this one particular issue.
Yeah. Why is that?
Well, we've allowed our experience with this issue, Al, to dominate our lives. The number one reason Black leadership rejects the pro-life movement is that Black leadership is post-abortive. There's an abortion in his life somewhere.
Mm.
And if he's a Black pastor in a church, probably the entire church is post-abortive. And so if you don't have a strategy to help him with this experience in his life, that you really can't reach him. But the Issue for Life Foundation, that's what we do, and we're really good at that. And God has blessed us mightily.
Yeah, I remember, I broadcast in Detroit for 10 years and lived in Detroit. I worked with a number of black pastors. And this question came up all the time because they were, quote, pro-life in terms of, their opinion. They were personally opposed to abortion, and there was a lot of pro-life sentiment within the congregations. But it was very difficult to activate black congregations in Detroit when I was there. And that was always a question of, well, why is that the case? Actually, you're the first one to bring up this idea that many of these congregations are themselves post-abortive.
Yeah. Well, Al, there are actually four specific reasons why black leadership rejects the pro-life movement. And I just gave you the number one. That's really all we
have. Sure. Let me hear more. Yeah.
Today. But, we have to talk later. But when you understand the reasons why someone is saying no, that's when you can put together the best strategy to move them from A to B. But if you don't understand why he is saying no,
yeah,
then you can do wonderful things. You can do just, it's just fine, awesome things. But it has absolutely nothing to do with why he's saying no. And because I'm licensed, I'm ordained, I'm in the club, I've always
right.
known, but I just never thought much about it until the Lord put it on my heart.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let's go back to your arrest. And how long was it between your arrest and your actual being able to get to the trial?
Let me see. I was arrested in May. And then I think I was in court September, October.
Were you able to find a good attorney? First question I have for you.
I had the best legal representation. Life Legal Defense did a fantastic job. But it didn't really matter what the evidence was. I mean, we had videotape evidence that my rights were being violated, and they didn't care. It became painfully clear that I was going to go to jail no matter what.
Okay. Now, what was the sentence they offered you?
I was facing 4 years in jail.
Okay.
But after the videotape evidence, the courtroom is packed. The media is everywhere. And they're expecting to see this monster. But the videotape evidence was just the opposite. They were the monsters, right?
Right.
And so the judge trying to save it reduced the sentence to 30 days. But he made a mistake. He decided to sentence me first. And then he asked me, after he sentenced me, did I have anything to say? I got up and said, as soon as I get out, I'm coming right back. I believe that an unjust law is no law at all. I'm coming right back. And at that point, I had a second hearing, which is illegal. You can't be, twice. And I had to come back to court a second time. They were trying to get me underneath the table, behind, the scene, to agree to this backdoor deal where I would say, yes, I'm guilty, but I refused, the deal. And so I ultimately ended up going to jail.
What was your time in jail like? I mean, did your fellow inmates relate to you, or did they think you were kind of out there?
No, the first thing that happened to me when I walked in was they said, "Hey, man, did you bring any drugs with you?" I said, no, I didn't do that. And then it just so happens, like about 30 minutes later, they're reading the paper, and I'm in the paper, and they go, "Are you the guy in the paper?" I ended up becoming one of the chaplains in jail. We ended up having prayer midnight like Paul and Silas. We ended up leading many, many, many of those in jail with me to Christ, And, oh, my goodness, we could do a whole other segment on just what happened to me when I was in jail.
What you fought this thing, you appealed it. Tell me what the outcome was.
Ultimately, we went to the Ninth Circuit because we were on our way to the Supreme Court. The laws exist like they do because of a Supreme Court decision, Hill v. Colorado, in which the Planned Parenthood promised the Supreme Court they wouldn't violate anybody's First Amendment rights. So this is what gives cities all across America the right to create these types of laws. Well, we were going to go to the Supreme Court. We knew the Ninth Circuit wasn't pro-life, that they were going to agree with everybody else.
Right.
And so we were going to go and attack Hill. But the Ninth Circuit said, if this goes to the Supreme Court, we're going to lose Hill. So the Ninth Circuit said, we agree with Hoy, but we're going to let the law stand, and the law has to apply to everybody. The law did not apply to everybody, and that became very evident in the Ninth Circuit. And when it did, the Ninth Circuit really had their hands tied.
So the eventual outcome was what? Is that bubble law still part of the local, the municipal law there in Oakland?
Yes, it is. But it applies to everybody. In the beginning, it really only applied to pro-lifers. And that came out in the Ninth Circuit. The Ninth Circuit judge literally said, if I was running for governor in the state of California and I was pro-life and I was passing out literature on a public sidewalk, could I do it? And the city attorney said, no. And he said, well, if I'm pro-abortion, I'm for abortion, could I pass out my literature and say I'm for abortion? And the city attorney said, yeah, you could do that. You could pass that out.
Wow.
And that's what turned the tide for us in the Ninth Circuit.
So tell me what you're doing now.
Oh, we're traveling all over the country, and right now we've got the number one program for Black pastors. The Israel for Life Foundation targets Black leadership, and we help them understand what's really going on with abortion in our community. And I tell you, it's just amazing what God is doing.
Next time you come in the Southeast Michigan, give me a call, would you? I'd like to get together again.
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah.
Be happy to do that.
Walter, thanks so much. Good talking with you again. The book is wonderful, and I'm glad we've got it. Thank you.
Bless you. Take care.
Again, Reverend Walter B. Hoy. It's called Black and Pro-Life in America, and it's available, of course, in our online bookstore. Also, check the EWTN religious catalog. But this is a powerful story, and again, showing once again that people of pro-life conviction are out there paying a price for their convictions. I'm Al Cresta.
Ciao, Sorelli and Fratelli, sisters and brothers. Teresa Tomio here from Catholic Connection. Through the years, so many of you have contacted me asking for my advice on traveling to my favorite place in the world, Italy. Being that I've had the blessing of visiting the country more than 50 times now, I've decided to respond to those special requests by introducing Tease Italy at TravelItalyExpert.com, a website for all things Italia, where you'll receive insider tips on where to eat, stay, shop, play, and most importantly, pray. At TravelItalyExpert.com, you'll discover, with the help of our key partners, Ave Maria Radio and Corporate Travel, this beautiful Catholic country through videos, blogs, and even personal travel consulting. So whether you're planning that upcoming visit or just want to learn more about Italy, connect with me on TravelItalyExpert.com. Ciao for now. We'll see you online at Tease Italy, TravelItalyExpert.com.
Christ is the answer, with Father John Ricardo.
Here's the new challenge. At least 1 hour a week in front of the Blessed Sacrament, with the goal of an hour a day in front of the Blessed Sacrament. I had a guy come up to me and he says, Father, you know, I'm doing a lot of things. I'm in a men's fellowship. I pray with my wife every day. I go to Mass every Sunday and usually a couple times during the week. I read Scripture. He goes, I want more. I said, do you pray in front of the Blessed Sacrament? He said, outside of Mass, no. I said, I think that's the more. See, all these saints, these are the ones who surround us. These are the ones who ran before us. These are the ones who fought well, who kept the faith. They would tell you, as would every single saint in heaven right now, you cannot run this race if you don't spend time with the Master. Whatever else we're doing, it's second, third, and fourth. First things need to be first. And the first thing is to be with the Master. And the Master is Jesus.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. In this morning's Magnificat, there's a meditation on pilgrimage, and just read a portion of it. What is a pilgrimage? It's a symbol of our life that is sometimes long and sometimes brief. We don't know how long it will last, but it is a journey toward God. We walk toward the Lord because He is the North Star, the point of attraction on our compass which guides our journey. If we lose our direction, we go to the right, to the left, and our journey wavers. To go on pilgrimage means to embrace our spiritual poverty, because a pilgrim is one who accepts God's call to be poor in spirit. Think about when people travel on foot with a piece of bread in a sack, and when it was gone, it was necessary for them to extend their hand and beg. To have a spirit of poverty means to recognize that we are poor people in need of everything, and above all, the grace of the Lord that fills our heart. The concept of pilgrimage is experiencing a renewal. I'm glad to see Teresa Tomeo with this new effort. TravelItalyExpert.com is helping to extend the idea of pilgrimage in our own day. We talked with Walter Hoy this last hour. I want to make sure that you understand his book is available. It's available in the online bookstore at AveMariaRadio.net. Also check the EWTN religious catalog. And next hour, we're going to talk with Dr. Carrie Gress, who's done an outstanding job in a book called The Anti-Mary Exposed. I mentioned yesterday that we are living in an increasingly hostile culture. And the difficult thing is to recognize that while at the same time not being intimidated by it or defensive. And so what we have to do is focus less on what's gone wrong and more on what's right, not about the culture, but about the faith. And of course, in the faith, the idea of the woman, Eve, the mother of all living, and the second Eve, Mary, who is the fruitful virgin, we get some idea of God's design for woman. We're going to talk that over with Carrie Gress next hour. We're also going to spend time with Dr. John Mark Maravalli on beauty. What is it? Why do we need it? Stay with me. I'm Al Christo.
This hour of Cresta in the Afternoon is co-produced by Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
With the New York Times in one hand and the Catechism of the Catholic Church in the other, Al Cresta is ready for conversations of consequence.
America is as divided as it has been in 150 years.
Politics is symptomatic of the culture.
They don't have a personal relationship with Christ.
We've been sacramentalized, but not evangelized.
Why should Washington listen to us when our own house is in disarray?
The church's greatest riches are her people.
Share the contagious joy of being a friend of Christ.
Story after story after story of people who have had inexplicable healings.
Broadcasting from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and taking a closer Catholic look at current events, issues, and ideas. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
That's beautifully said, Al.
Thanks for your voice for liberty.
It's like a homecoming each time on your program.
Clear to me that you've thought these things through at a deep level.
Let's build the church, and then we'll bless the nations. Well, good afternoon to you. I'm Al Cresta with another hour talking about the things that matter most. Beauty. It's a concept that people believe is hopelessly subjective. You know the cliche, beauty's in the eye of the beholder. That's actually not true. There are clear criteria for what counts for beauty. And you can get terribly philosophical about it, but it's always best to begin with our immediate experience. And most of us know beauty when we see it. It's somehow related to the concept of ordered patterns, symmetry. There's certain criteria that we all recognize as beautiful. And beauty has been an underutilized of the great transcendentals. We talk about truth, we talk about goodness quite a bit. Beauty is the one of the three that seems to take a back seat. We're going to try to remedy that a little bit today when we talk with Dr. John Mark Maravalli about beauty, what it is, why we need it, We're also going to talk with Dr. Carrie Gress. During the rise of the second wave feminist movement, there was one element that held these women together, and they had very different personalities, very different backgrounds. Two things, actually, they shared together. One thing is they had terrible experiences with fathers, husbands, boyfriends. And the second thing is abortion. That was the one agreed-upon policy objective. It was thought that the only way to empower the woman was to give her the power to destroy her children. There's a strange, wicked connection here. We're going to talk that over with Dr. Carrie Gress, but first, we're going to get to today's headlines.
Thank you, Al, and good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Wednesday, July 10th. It is the Feast of St. Veronica Giuliani. And today's news is brought to you by Charity Mobile, supporting pro-life and Catholic causes at charitymobile.com. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is calling for prayers for Christian brothers and sisters in Iran. While speaking at the Christians United for Israel conference in Washington, D.C. yesterday, Pompeo spoke about four Iranian Christians sentenced to 10-year prison sentences for acting against national security. Pompeo said they were sent to prison after being beaten for running house churches. He said he prays every day for people of all religions persecuted in Iran and asked those in attendance to do the same. The leader of Hong Kong has declared a controversial extradition bill dead. Correspondent Bill Zinfer reports that this may not satisfy protesters.
Carrie Lam has made it clear that the bill that sparked massive protests in Hong Kong is, for all intents and purposes, dead. However, that may not be enough to placate protesters who have demanded the proposal be officially withdrawn. The bill would have allowed those arrested in Hong Kong to be extradited to mainland China. One activist said there was no reason why the demonstrations should stop. The protesters have also demanded that Lam step down. Bill Zinfer, NBC News Radio.
The UK ambassador to the US is resigning following the recent leak of diplomatic cables that were highly critical of the Trump administration. Kim DeRoche stepped down today. The cables obtained over the weekend by a British tabloid show DeRoche assessing the White House as dysfunctional. And the world champion US women's soccer team has their keys to New York City following a ceremony at City Hall and a massive parade. The US defeated the Netherlands on Sunday to win its fourth overall World Cup championship. This is only the second time that the women's team has had a ticker tape parade in New York. The first time was in 2015 when the team won the World Cup after beating Japan. With your Ave Maria Radio News, I'm Dan McGraw.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. I've noticed in popular culture, whether it's women's sports or fashion or politics or the superheroes that are popular in the Marvel Universe now, we're watching a very conscious representation of the woman as, above all, powerful. Now, look, nobody begrudges women or anyone power when power is understood as the ability to get things done. You know, to get things done requires equal measures of skill and wisdom, cooperativeness, and, of course, power. And anybody who will be successful has to learn how to plan and organize and lead and evaluate performance and all this. Nobody begrudges men or women power in that sense. But to see power presented as the ideal virtue of woman is perverse. I should say, too, to see power presented as the ideal virtue of man is also perverse. Power tells us nothing about virtue. The ideal for man or woman is not that they can will to do, but what they will to do and the means by which they do it. So I get tired of seeing women portrayed as budding adolescents who are always negotiating how they can individuate themselves from, you know, their environment. The woman or man who thinks power is their calling card is at heart an adolescent, unconcerned about virtue, unconcerned about what power is meant to accomplish. Power is the means to an end. It isn't the end in and of itself. So when somebody tells me they're powerful, I say, yeah, to do what? Power to do what? We've lived through this before. Those of us who are baby boomers, we went through it in the 1970s. And after the failure of the Equal Rights Amendment and then the reemergence of a culturally meaningful conservatism, We saw the reassertion of theologically conservative Christians in our national conversations about family and parenting and marriage and the role of religion in public life. We actually did see some sanity return for a while. It was always tension, but there was some sanity there. People began to remember that two-parent families, all things being equal, are superior to one-parent families. Now, this doesn't mean that single parents can't do a good job. It just means, all things being equal, it's a heck of a lot more work and a lot more dangerous. Common sense did reassert itself for a while. And in fact, for about two decades, feminist leaders lamented that young women didn't want to call themselves feminists anymore. They saw feminism as outdated, very narrow in its concerns. And they complained that these younger women didn't understand whose shoulders they were standing on and, you know, that kind of thing. Well, that's changed. And today we're seeing not only a reassertion of radical feminism spurred on by a generation of activist scholars in women's studies departments and feminist scholars of religion who have been trying to present the idea of the goddess as a vision of female empowerment. But we're seeing, again, for young girls, a portrait of the woman that is value-neutered. The powerful woman need not exercise any constructive achievement. They need not demonstrate any real virtue. It is enough that they are, quote, powerful. That was sick when it came to men. It's sick when it comes to women. Next segment, I'm going to be talking with Dr. Carrie Gress, whose thoughtful books like The Anti-Mary Exposed and The Marian Option is thinking of womanhood within the heart of the church. And one surprising thing she's discovered in her research is an unexpected convergence of cultural Marxism and paganism or occultism. She writes in a recent article, "We can see Marxism and the occult on display in the lives of 12 women, not an insignificant number, including Kate Millett, who was raised Catholic and who is the mastermind behind women's studies programs in our universities. They recite a shocking litany in the early 1970s in a New York apartment, which proclaimed their desire to destroy the family and monogamy by promoting promiscuity, eroticism, prostitution, abortion, and homosexuality." End quote. Carrie told me this last summer. She had been talking with Kate Millett's sister, Mallory. So I called Mallory Millett up and I asked her, did this really happen? And let me let you let her describe what she saw.
The chairwoman brought the meeting to order and they started this sort of litany. It was just like a Catholic litany, where the chairwoman would make a statement and the rest of the group would answer. And this is how it goes. "Why are we here today?" And they would answer, "To make revolution." And she would say, "What kind of revolution?" And they would answer, "The cultural revolution." "And how do we make the cultural revolution?" They would say, "By destroying the American family." "How do we destroy the family?" "By destroying the American patriarch," they would cry. "And how do we destroy the American patriarch?" she asked. "By taking away his power." She would say, "How do we do that?" "By destroying monogamy," they would shout. "How do we destroy monogamy?" And this was the answer that just left me breathless the first time I heard this. They opened every meeting with this, so I got used to it. "But how can we destroy monogamy?" she would ask. And they would cry out, "By promoting promiscuity, eroticism, prostitution, abortion, and homosexuality."
That is...
So those were the things that the national organization was constituted to do, to promote promiscuity, eroticism, prostitution, abortion, and homosexuality.
It's amazing. You don't know in particular, these are 12 women, anti-apostles, you might think of them in that way. But certainly our culture has achieved all these things since. Years ago, I studied Marcia Cohen's book, The Sisterhood, which looks at the lives of four of the most influential of modern feminists, Germaine Greer, Kate Millett, Gloria Steinem, Betty Friedan. These are of the last generation. But their lives, it was shocking. I mean, their lives were filled with terrible relationships with men, lousy men, broken men. You might say behind every feminist champion, you can find a rotten man. Very broken people. Now, Phyllis Chesler, one of the grandmothers of radical feminism, in her latest book, politically incorrect feminism, maintains that all of the major players in the second wave feminist movement were broken women with troubled childhoods, particularly with significant issues with their mothers. She calls these the lost girls. She's sympathetic to the lost girls. These lost girls are the ones who rode the wave of feminism meteoric rise through television and books and overwhelmingly influenced the culture in ways that are difficult to really wrap our minds around because it happened relatively quickly. Carrie is going to make that point in the next segment when we get together, that despite all the differences among them, the one thing these, quote, lost girls could all agree on was abortion. That became the sine qua non of modern feminism. I interviewed Gloria Steinem a few years ago now, but I asked her that very question. I said, can there be modern feminism without reliance upon abortion? She said, absolutely not. Abortion is the sine qua non of modern feminism. Without it, there is no feminism. So we're living in a day where this is being reasserted. And I think this is, again, great frustration to so many women, boomer women, who over the last generation have resisted and fought to demonstrate a way of life, especially Catholic and other Christian women, who have tried to demonstrate a way of life which is more in keeping with Scripture, with the teaching of the Church. But we're having to fight this again. You know, throughout most of Western culture, when someone said the woman, we'd know they were talking about the Blessed Virgin, the second Eve. But Mary, as the woman extraordinaire, had to be trashed because part of her contribution was the idea of fruitful virginity. Fruitful virginity. Yes, it's paradoxical. It's meant to be. The ideal woman didn't necessarily have to bear biological children, but the essence of being woman was spiritual maternity. That was the heart of femaleness. Now, women have this in varying measure, just like men have spiritual paternity in varying measure. So not everybody is the same. There's a wide range of people as they express the essence of their particular sex. Of course, most women would go on to choose to be mothers, although that's no longer, we're not as able to say that as freely as we were 25 years ago even. But the nature of woman didn't require biological childbearing because woman, by definition, was spiritual maternity. And in the eyes of the baby boomer feminists, though, this was a trap. It was a trap, they thought, to limit their options in the world. Why do they believe this? Well, because poor relationships with their mother, abusive relationships with men, because they feared that it interfered with success in the marketplace, because they saw real injustice in the workplace. Whatever the reason, ultimately, the Blessed Mother as the ideal of womanhood has become increasingly ignored. And so now when we think of the ideal woman, we talk about girl power or strong is the new pretty or be fierce or empowerment. And it's really a category change in the minds of everyday women that has taken hold. And the new female goal is not virtue of any sort, but power. You look at popular feminist books, titles like Nasty Woman, Full Frontal Feminism, Witches, Sluts, Feminists, Bad Girls Throughout History, Bad Feminist, Feminist Fight Club. The overriding message is that what marks the modern woman is toughness and power. And that's what's being praised in young women today. We applaud them for their toughness while neglecting the sad things that may have made them tough in the first place. We look at, exterior trappings when we ignore interior wounds. Radical feminism, by the way, was never about equal pay for equal work, and there's no serious cultural argument about that these days. Nobody argues that there should be unequal pay for equal work. The recent spate about women soccer players getting less than men is directly related to how much money is generated by men's soccer rather than women's soccer. It isn't about how successful you are in the standings. It's about how successful you are in getting people in the seats, how many people will turn out to see you perform and play, how many sponsors will pay how much money to support you. And when women's soccer has that degree of popularity, dollar-wise, they'll get paid what men are being paid. And again, they'll negotiate more, perhaps. The sad thing is that women have forgotten the very essential role they have in forming children into healthy and mature adults, which is the great influence, the very building blocks of any healthy civilization. You know, when someone asked Tony Campolo's wife what she did for a living, she was at a home full-time mother with her children, she'd say, well, I'm socializing two Homo sapiens into the dominant values of the Judeo-Christian tradition in order that they might be instruments for the transformation of the social order into the kind of eschatological utopia that God willed from the beginning of creation. And then Peggy would look at the other woman and say, and what do you do, dear?
Father Benedict Groeschel.
Ah, I love reverence. Wherever I go in the world, I usually go to visit the religious buildings. And no matter what I see reverence, awe. I've been in temples and mosques where I saw more reverence and awe of God than I see in Christian churches, even sometimes in Catholic churches. Oh yes, let me say it. And when I was a boy, Catholics were much more reverent and respectful in church. You never, ever spoke in church. I was a young priest. A man had a heart attack at the beginning of Mass. I stopped the Mass. We prayed for the man while the police were coming, the ambulance. They removed him from the church. He didn't die. Not one word was spoken. The police officers and the ambulance attendants who came whispered respect. I wish it were true today.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popchuk.
Do you know the best way to get kids to obey? Remain calm. In the words of St. John Bosco, quote, show your children that uncontrolled emotion plays no part in your actions. They will respect you for that, and their respect will prompt their obedience, end quote. It turns out research agrees. In fact, studies show that the louder you yell, the less kids listen to what you say, and the more they just treat you like you're crazy. That might cause kids to keep their heads down around you, but it won't help them learn from you. Remaining calm helps you become the parent your kids want to learn from instead of just avoid. Need help developing calm discipline strategies? Check out Parenting with Grace, the Catholic Parent Guide to Raising Almost Perfect Kids. I'm Dr. Greg Popchuk, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
If you're currently an EWTN media missionary or just interested in becoming one, we've got some great news. EWTN Media Missionaries has a new and improved website. EWTNmissionaries.com, designed with you in mind. Our new site is loaded with great features and it's easy to navigate. There are so many different ways that you can help EWTN. Join us in sharing the eternal word with the world. Visit EWTNmissionaries.com today.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 10 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan cost goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile, everyday living, effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
Beth, why is our health insurance so expensive? Our premium and deductible are so high. Plus, I don't want my family to support a company that doesn't share our values.
Kim, there is another option. Check out CMF Curo. It's an affordable Catholic healthcare ministry where members share their medical costs in community, and it's pro-life. We joined last year and have saved thousands, all without compromising our values. Just go to MyCatholicHealthcare.com.
CMF Curo sounds exactly like what our family needs.
Yeah, that's MyCatholicHealthcare.com.
Hi, everybody. Dr. A here. Well, being a grandparent's just like being a parent, isn't it? Only different here. I have a book with that same title. And in that book, I take on the ups and the downs of being grandparents. It's a second go-around with the kids in a way that mirrors God's own unconditional love for us. You can get the book and my many others at AveMariaRadio.net.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. Thank you for joining me. I was last weekend, I went to see the Avengers Endgame. Actually, one of my sons wanted to see the new Spider-Man movie, but when I told him I hadn't seen Endgame, he said, well, you have to go see that. So I went to see it. And I enjoy these, these Avengers movies. They're definitely escapist. But something I noticed, which I'd seen before in popular culture, and that is the idea of the woman as fierce, as powerful. So, for instance, in the Marvel universe of superheroes, the most powerful is Captain Marvel, who, has everybody, I want to say subordinate to her, but certainly beneath her in terms of power. And I notice they're spinning off a new superhero family, which is entirely female. Now, of course, when I was a kid, there was Wonder Woman in the comics that we had. So it wasn't as though there's anything that was especially abhorrent about the idea of a woman superhero. But it does strike me that what's interesting about all these women is that at no time do you see what you might call fruitfulness or spiritual or biological maternity. There's a certain sense in which they're all fairly sterile. With me right now is Dr. Carrie Gress. She has a doctorate in philosophy from the Catholic University of America, editor of the Catholic Women's Online magazine, Theology of Home, the author of several books, including The Anti-Mary Exposed and the forthcoming Theology of Home. Carrie's been with us a number of times before, but I just came across her article in Catholic World Report called The Subtle Lie, Women Must Be Powerful but Not Fruitful, and I thought that's exactly what I seem to be seeing here. Carrie, good to have you back.
Thanks so much for having me. It's always a pleasure.
So this is what you see, too, that there's this contrast between, you might say, two contrasting visions of the woman. Woman as fruitful garden, the Blessed Virgin who's fruitful even in her virginity, versus the kind of the sterile dynamo.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it certainly extends well beyond comic books. I think this is kind of the message that's given out to so many of us, that we need to be these independent career women and, put off having children and don't get married, or if you do, don't have children for a while. And it's just the idea at the root of that is really just the recognition that we're meant to be powerful and strong and independent. And, those things all have their place. But when that becomes the overriding message, especially when it's at the expense of the family and all of these other relationships that ultimately women do find incredibly precious and important, I think that's the real problem. And it's incredibly sad because, of course, we're fed this message when we're very young. And it's not till, we're much older that we begin to realize that these are not the most important things to us. And you can hear it now. And a lot of older women are lamenting that they didn't have bigger families or they don't have husbands. This is, I think, part and parcel of why we're seeing pets take on such an enormous place in the culture, because women are made to nurture something. And when we don't have children, we're going to find other ways to love people and to find love for ourselves.
I'm sure there's a long intellectual history to this. How has power come to be the popular defining characteristic of the woman? The best thing you can say about a woman these days is that she's powerful, or, as you say, independent, or a badass.
Right. Yeah, I think it's fascinating to look at it because the argument hasn't really changed very much over the years. There's still sort of this emphasis on blaming the patriarchy for everything. And I certainly chronicle that in my book, and it's linked in this article. But you can even see, this morning I was reading headlines, Serena Williams is blaming the patriarchy for the meltdown that she had on the tennis court last year. So it's the same exact argument that's used over and over again, where women are feeling sort of this victimization and have taken it on as an identity and blaming everything on this notion of the patriarch. And so therefore we have to rise up and be stronger than that. I think that's the kind of the intellectual underpinning of it. So it's just fascinating to see how it hasn't really changed in 50 years. And the sad thing is that we haven't done a good job of uncovering this. In fact, it just seems to be getting worse, where this message just permeates politics, Hollywood, the fashion industry, music industry, all of these make the same argument about women and, you know, the lie that our children are going to impede our lives and ruin our careers or educations or whatever. But we haven't done a great job of kind of unveiling that and looking at it and seeing, you know, this is a problem. And on the other hand, we also see sort of the straw man or straw woman that's set up for those of us that don't believe in all of this. It's always interesting to look at the comments that people make about my work. And usually it's always saying, you know, there was one yesterday that said something effective. You know, I must take directions from my husband for my grocery list and how I clean my house. And, you know, I mean, it's just ridiculous kinds of ideas. And yet, because the matriarchy, because these ideas are so strong, they just don't have any other way to see women because there aren't other examples of it in the public square.
Years ago, when I was doing some speaking on modern feminism, I read a book called The Sisterhood, which chronicled the backgrounds of four mothers of second wave feminism. And I noticed all of them had rotten, terrible relationships with men, fathers, boyfriends, husbands. And it was stunning.
Wow. No, and there are plenty of books that chronicle this. I use The Sisterhood for some of my research. And actually, it's interesting in that book because the author seems to make it sort of this badge of honor that they have these awful relationships. Yeah. She doesn't see it as maybe these women were incredibly broken, and this is one of the reasons why they react in this way. So it's interesting to sort of see that pattern, too, where we're paying attention to what made them tough, but we're not looking at the tragedy behind all of that. What is it has made them so tough and aggressive and whatnot? And it's, and much of it does come from these awful relationships that they had with their parents, or it's like dominoes. It just gets worse from there, where they have terrible relationships with other men, other women, and so it's incredibly tragic what so many of these women have gone through.
You mentioned in the article this strange interplay between the second wave feminism and the occult. And I know that goes back to Kate Millett's sister, who I've talked to, and you're the one who introduced me to her. Tell us a little bit about that. Yeah.
Well, you know, one of the things that has become really crystal clear to me is that whenever the church and the faith are weak, paganism, it's like this jungle. It's just going to find its way in because we tend as humans in our human nature to create gods of our own image or to find a goddess or god to worship. And this is really what's happened here. All these broken women who were searching for something to cling to, again, they're finding it in these old models of different goddesses or, you know, demons from the past and kind of resurrecting them and giving them new life. So Lilith is one of those who's actually, her story predates even our own scripture, goes back to ancient Egypt and Samaria. And now Lilith is upheld as the woman that wouldn't, you know, give in to the authority of man based on her story. But, you know, if you look at who Lilith is, fundamentally what she boils down to is she's a woman that seduces men and she kills babies. even the word lullaby comes from the Arabic of, you know, protect us against Lilith.
Wow.
So it's fascinating to see this message that's been given down to women, sort of this prescription of don't be like this woman.
Yeah.
And yet when we forget these stories and when we don't have a strong sense of Christianity or a robust image of woman as we see in Our Lady, then what happened was these women forgot these stories and they never knew these stories. And they think that they're doing something new when in fact all they're doing is just grasping at ancient paganism all over again. So it's fascinating to see these cycles kind of repeat themselves. But the occult is very much at the heart of what we're seeing in feminist movement today. We have seen it for the last 50 years. In fact, we even see more people practicing Wicca than there are Presbyterians. So it's definitely on the rise.
They do agree on one thing, and that is abortion, which, of course, right. is the destruction of children. What's really troubling about this is that abortion isn't seen as a tragic necessity, even. It's seen as a path to power.
I think you're absolutely right. And this is that there's a website, I think Oprah has helped fund part of it, called Shout Your Abortion.
Wow.
These, you know, these women are telling these horrendous stories about this triumph they had in their abortion. And even this morning on the, I think it's a site called The Cut. I haven't read it yet, but partially because I just couldn't stomach it. But this woman talks about her favorite abortion and, you know, lays it out. So, yeah, it's one of these things where they're trying to sort of destigmatize it. and make it look like it's something that they should be celebrating. And yet, if you look historically, there is nothing more tender or precious than that relationship between a child and their mother. And the fact that we have gotten to the point where women are so desensitized means clearly we have a lot of broken women, but we also have a lot of incredibly misinformed women. And I think that that's really where the big struggle is how do we start shifting the culture so that right. women start understanding that they're destroying themselves, that there's an element of this, that abortion isn't just about killing a clump of cells, but it has a very integral place within our human nature, within the family, within all of that. I mean, this isn't like soldiers of old who are going out to kill strangers. This is mothers killing their own children. Right. And I think until we sort of wrap our heads around that familial relationship again, it's going to be a very hard uphill stance. And of course, even if we do get some of the laws changed, that will have some subtle effects. But I think we need to do a better job on the ground in terms of just helping women understand who we are and that our human nature can't be changed. And that's another piece that they really try to convince us of, is that we can become someone different fundamentally. And that goes back to Marx and what we saw in the Soviet Union. So there's some deep tentacles there that we have to really start unraveling in our culture today.
Yeah, there is this assertion of the sovereign self, that really mm-hmm. the yeah. ideal is the person who is just not attached to anything, not tradition, not yeah. the will of God, mm-hmm. not even family mm-hmm. or loved ones, but one has to rise above everything to just assert one's will, and that will then mm-hmm. becomes, it can be all that you decide you want to be. Mm-hmm. There's no essential humanity.
My will be done.
Yeah, yeah, that's really what it is.
It's fascinating to look at the pattern of what happened with second wave feminism, because I think we can see the exact same pattern mapped onto what we're seeing with the LGBT movement at this point. It's you can almost call it the fourth wave of feminism, because of the fact that they're all focused again on, you know, they've rallied around these sexual sins the same way that feminism was rallied around abortion. And yet it still comes back to this idea of what my will is and what I desire to happen. So it's fascinating to see the overlap and, you know, how one has borne the fruit of the other. And until we start to understand that our will isn't going to lead us happiness, then, you know, we're going to be in trouble.
Well, Carrie, let me thank you once again. How do people stay in touch with the work that you're doing?
The best place to go is carriegress.com.
Carriegress.com. And definitely get the book, The Anti-Mary Exposed. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Dr. Carrie Gress will have all the contact information available at AveMariaRadio.net.
The EWTN home video highlight for July is The Chaplet of the Divine Mercy. This beautiful new rendition of the beloved devotional was shot on location at the National Shrine of the Divine Mercy in Stockbridge, Massachusetts. Enjoy five versions of this invocation of trust in our Lord. Order your DVD at EWTNRC.com 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or call 1-800-854-6316.
When the need for senior care arises, home is where the heart is. Visiting Angels provides home care for mom or dad up to 24 hours per day, including personal care, meals, and light housework. You may select your professional caregiver with Visiting Angels. More information at visitingangels.com or at 877-374-LIVE. That's 877-374-LIVE. Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI experienced many triumphs and near superhuman struggles during his papacy. Now go behind the scenes in Benedict Up Close, the inside story of 8 dramatic years, the latest release from EWTN Publishing. You'll learn how Pope Benedict's youth shaped his papacy, the real reason he resigned, and more. Benedict Up Close. Available now at EWTNRC.com or call 1-800-854-6316.
We recently prevailed in a lawsuit filed in an Oklahoma federal court by Raja E. Fatia, a Muslim and a board member of CARE Oklahoma, against Chad and Nicole Neal, the owners of an Oklahoma gun range. Fatia was represented by lawyers from CARE, the ACLU, and a large New York law firm, the usual suspects. The American Freedom Law Center represented the Neals. The controversy arose when in 2015, Fatia entered the Neals gun range armed with a loaded military-issue handgun strapped to his side, a military-style rifle slung over his shoulder, magazines loaded with approximately 140 rounds of 9mm ammunition, a concealed recording device in his pocket, and a dangerous agenda. To create a controversy with armed individuals at the gun range, hoping that he would not be allowed to fire his weapons, so he could file this meritless lawsuit and run to the media with his prearranged Islamophobia narrative, knowing that the liberal media would willingly serve as an echo chamber for his spurious claim of discrimination. CARE's lawsuit was dismissed with prejudice. CARE's extremely reckless and dangerous attempt to set up a lawsuit to make a political point has failed. Apparently, CARE and the ACLU didn't want to put CARE's nefarious ties to terrorism on trial, so they caved in. And in the end, the good guys won yet again. I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel for the American Freedom Law Center, bringing you this Faith and Freedom Minute. You can learn more about the American Freedom Law Center and its fight for your faith and freedom by visiting our website and liking us on Facebook.
Hi, everybody. Dr. A here. Well, being a grandparent's just like being a parent, isn't it? Only different here. I have a book with that same title. And in that book, I take on the ups and the downs of being grandparents. It's a second go around with the kids in a way that mirrors God's own unconditional love for us. You can get the book and my many others at AveMariaRadio.net.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. Beauty is becoming more and more a topic that Christians and Catholics in particular are thinking about with an eye towards ministry, evangelization, and of course, aesthetics. What is beauty? Again, we think we know when we say the good, right? We think we know what we're talking about. When we talk about the truth, we think we know what we're talking about. But beauty, well, we don't know what to say about it. The language is more difficult. A lot of people think it's purely subjective. You know, beauty's in the eye of the beholder, that kind of thing. My guest, Dr. John Mark Maravalli, is professor of systematic and moral theology at Mount St. Mary's Seminary in Maryland. He's the author of three books, including most recently, Beauty, What It Is and Why It Matters. And he's debated noted atheists on topics such as the existence of God, same-sex marriage, theistic morality. He and his wife, Jessica, have five children. And John Marcus, good to have you with me.
Thanks so much for letting me come on.
Beauty is one of those things that is difficult to talk about, although most people think they know what it is when they see it. There's a widespread belief that beauty is purely subjective. What you think beautiful, I don't think is beautiful. So why don't we address that to begin with? From a Catholic point of view, is beauty purely subjective?
No, it's not. And, you know, I don't think we should be surprised that in a culture that thinks often enough that truth is relative, and
right,
a culture that often enough thinks goodness is relative, that same culture should fall under the illusion that beauty is also relative. But from the traditional Catholic perspective, truth, beauty, and goodness are intrinsically equivalent. We experience reality differently, but all reality, since it comes from God, is in itself true, good, and beautiful. And so beauty would, by implication, be just as objective as truth and goodness.
Mm-hmm. Is there something, I guess, I agree with you, but the question I would bring up is, in a conversation with somebody, what would you propose as an eye-opener when it comes to demonstrating the objective reality of beauty?
Yeah, I think one of the ideas connected with beauty that's very strong in the tradition is the idea of order.
Yes.
So there's recognizable patterns in beauty. That beauty expresses a conformity. Basically, beauty is something being or acting the way it's supposed to, and that expresses intelligence. So if you look at nature, for instance, nature displays patterns. Those patterns, that regularity, expresses the intelligence of the one who made them. And so you can find this sort of objective criterion for beauty by looking for order. Mm-hmm. Do things display regularity? Do they display their nature? But there's also this other aspect of beauty which I do believe impacts people differently, and that's the aspect of wonder, of newness, of freshness, or as I call it in the book, of surprise.
Hmm.
I think that our God is a God who makes all things new. He asks us to sing a new song to the Lord. Augustine calls God the divine beauty that is ever ancient but also ever new. And I think that the appreciation of beauty, which people experience to different degrees, depends on them not only perceiving order, but allowing themselves to be surprised by it. And that takes discipline, because actually, you need to set aside time and availability to allow yourself to marvel at beautiful objects and beautiful truths and beautiful stories.
So you need to create some space in time for you to sit still? Is that it actually?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so train your attention.
Beauty involves, the experience of beauty involves delighting in reality. Now, you can't delight in reality either if you're escaping from reality through busyness or if you're escaping from reality through entertainment. And those are almost the only two states that most people in our society experience. They're either work binging or they're Netflix binging.
Yeah.
And in both cases, they are not able to simply allow, as Pieper says, to allow the reality of things to provoke us to celebration. So, you know, just to summarize, yeah, you got to create space. You got to sit back and appreciate the surprising goodness of the world and of the one who made it.
Yeah, we do live in a culture of constant distraction, it seems to me. And whether, again, you've mentioned through work or through entertainment. When St. Paul in Romans chapter 1 talks about, roughly he says, since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes have been clearly seen through what he's made. But men don't offer gratitude for it. What they do is they suppress that truth in unrighteousness. What is the impulse within us that negates this order, this beauty, when we look at creation?
Yeah, that's a great question. Let me try a shot at it.
Sure.
Beauty demands, as I said, truth, goodness, beauty are all equivalent to being and the being that God has made.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that humility is the virtue of, first of all, accepting that our being is good, and therefore being able to, and so in a sense, we don't have to worry about that, right? God delights in our being, because
yes,
if he didn't, we wouldn't exist.
Right.
Well, when we know that we delight God, that we are good just by existing, that reduces the need to prove our value through getting stuff done. And only when we are willing to sort of put what we have to do as less important than what God has already done, will we accept reality as God made it. So basically, just to summarize, because we don't know that we are loved by God,
mm-hmm,
we are not able to accept his world. We are too busy through the sin of pride trying to, you know, make ourselves gods, make ourselves valuable, make ourselves established independently of divine love. And so I think that's a perpetual temptation, is to make ourselves great, to make our own value, because we are just unable to accept the goodness that God has bestowed on us and the delight he takes in us just for being here.
There's something wickedly ironic about that, isn't there? I mean, the idea that by trying to prove our worth, we should actually cut ourselves off from the very sources of life that are screaming at us that we are worthy.
Yeah. I mean, I describe it, you know, my kids, I probably shouldn't do this, but I let them play about an hour of video games once a month.
Mm-hmm.
And they are always, I have this curse of being better at video games than my kids. My parents I would have never asked my parents for help playing video games. So my kids will ask me for help playing video games, and then I'll help them maybe beat a level or something. And they'll pray, you know, say, oh, thanks, Dad, thanks. Oh, can you beat the next guy? So I imagine, this is what I imagine. I imagine God or Father, who represents God, taking his kid into a beautiful cathedral, beautiful basilica with tapestries, with frescoes and with mosaics. And he says to his son, I built this for you because I love you. Do you like it? And the son is trying to play a game on his phone or something. And he looks up, he says, yeah, Dad, it's great. Could you help me beat this level? And I would say that is the situation most of us are in most of the day. When we think of God, instead of looking up at everything he's given us because he loves us and just having the default attitude be, thank you, this is beautiful, we say, actually, I'm really anxious about this particular small little project or problem I have. Could you fix it for me? And so hopefully bringing people back to a sense of beauty will ground their prayer in gratitude and delight for what God has already done and not so much stress for what we still have yet to do.
Did John Paul II have much to say in his writings about beauty?
He did in different places. He wrote a letter to artists, which was marvelous. He talks about sort of this intrinsic connection between faith and art and faith and beauty. He points out that we need beauty like we need food and oxygen. And so artists are providing society with a service that is just as necessary to human well-being as any material good. He also talked about beauty and art in the theology of the body, particularly on representing nude figures,
mm-hmm.
and when that was okay and when it wasn't. But I would say for me that the core point he made, at least that I found most valuable, is how art and religion need each other. Because when art stops being about the most sublime, important things, people stop paying attention to it.
Yeah.
Which is, of course, what's happened in the realm of fine arts, is it's gotten progressively weirder and weirder, provocative without being profound,
mm-hmm.
and nobody pays attention to it anymore.
Right, right.
Whereas, for instance, in the Middle Ages, when an artist would design and execute a masterpiece for a cathedral, all the people would come out and celebrate. There's a story in the book about a case in Siena where Duccio made his Maestà, and all of Siena shut down, and the whole city processed around and had a feast so they could install this image of Our Lady in the church.
Well,
now, that's when art matters, is when it connects us to the divine.
I think it's interesting. It sounds like beauty surprises and ugliness shocks.
That's exactly right. So I would say that modern life is also largely a temptation. If beauty, as I think it is, beauty is a combination of order and surprise, then you have two temptations. You have the temptation to order without surprise, and that's banality. That's mm-hmm. just repetitiveness mm-hmm. and being on automatic pilot. It's sort of the bad kind of traditionalism where you just do the same thing over
right.
and over without
right.
thinking of it. And then the other temptation is the temptation to surprise without order. And that, as you say, that's shock, that's chaos, that's perversion. That's, sexual fetishism. So you really have, it's really brutal because people will go to work and they'll often live banality, order without surprise, and then they'll come home and they'll turn on a screen and they'll indulge in surprise without order, which is, disordered entertainment.
That's fascinating. And we're out of time today, but I'd like to give you a call back and pick this theme up again. Because there are a number
That's
of questions
great.
I have for you. You close the book talking about humor, which I think is fascinating, and also questions that I have about the idea of the chaste nude and where that plays in the Catholic tradition. John Mark, thanks so much.
Thanks so much for having me out. God bless.
Dr. John Mark Miravalli, beauty, what it is and why it matters.
Did you know you have divine glory living within you? If you are a baptized Christian, you are host to a gentle guest, says the Catholic Catechism. This guest inspires, guides, corrects, and strengthens us to live our life in Christ. That gentle friend is the Spirit of Christ, the third person of the Blessed Trinity, the Holy Spirit. He is active in us, transforming us spiritually if we are willing, so that we may live as children of the light. There are two ways to live. The first way, the way of Christ, leads to life. The opposite way leads to death, an eternity without God. Choose life, then. Choose Christ, a life of challenge and joy. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Christ is the answer, with Father John Ricardo.
I tell oftentimes an experience that I had at Divine Child when I was a young priest, 1 year ordained. First time I ever really saw the power of the Blessed Sacrament. And we simply exposed the Blessed Sacrament at the end of Mass one night. I encouraged people. I said, you know what, we've been in the habit of praying over people after Mass. I said, we're not going to do that this week. I'm just going to invite people to come on up and pray if they want to pray. And I put the Blessed Sacrament on the altar. I kneeled down. As I kneeled down, the church is in the sanctuary, the whole church. And as I'm looking at this, and I'm looking at the people there, and I'm looking at Jesus under the appearance of bread there, I saw the Lord standing on the altar. And he's just standing there looking out at all the people. And then at a certain point, he turned towards me, and he just bowed. And he says, don't you see how easy this is? You don't have to do anything. You just have to put me out. You put me out, and I will work.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. Remember, you can follow through on any of the conversations we had today by going to the Cresta Guest Archives at AveMariaRadio.net. Black and Pro-Life in America, the book by Reverend Walter Hoy, available in the online bookstore. Also check the EWTN Religious Catalog. And Dr. John Mark Miravalli's book on beauty, what it is and why it matters, available again in the online bookstore. But always check the EWTN Religious Catalog as well. We're going to have in the Cresta Guest Archives Carrie Gress's article, which appeared originally in Catholic World Report. It's a powerful story which looks at increasing breakdown in our public, our common understanding of what it means to be woman. And, you know, this goes back to the garden and the lie that the serpent told Eve. She said, look at the fruit here. And Eve looked at the fruit that she had been forbidden to eat, and she saw that it was desirable for wisdom. And that begins a long storyline in the Old Testament and into the New about human wisdom versus divine wisdom, such that St. Paul in 1 Corinthians chapter 1 begins talking about his preaching as foolishness to the world. Why? Because the world has built its understanding of reality on human wisdom rather than divine wisdom. Wisdom which tries to see the human being as the ultimate reference point versus a view of the world which starts with God as our ultimate reference point. A view of the world which denies divine revelation, and a view of the world which tries to build on divine revelation. Thanks for being with me today. I'll be back, Lord willing, tomorrow for another edition of Cresta in the Afternoon.
Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio, and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. To follow up on any of the guests or information presented on today's program, visit the Cresta Guest Archive at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMaria Radio.net. To listen to this or any other edition of Cresta in the Afternoon, visit the audio archives at AveMariaRadio.net. Or to order a CD of the program, call 734-930-4506 or email orders at AveMariaRadio.net. That's 734-930-4506 or orders at AveMariaRadio.net.